When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Williams, why isn't it recording? Okay, now it's recording. Author of my favorite book, Metamorphosis of Prime Intellect, which will be available in the description and sticking in the top comment. Before this, I had on a professional audiobook narrator, Noah Michael Levine, because I had reached out trying to get an author of a guy that wrote a book about like burning toxic chemicals in the Iraq War. Point being, is I looked at the cover of the book on Audible and I emailed the author, which is just what I do, and I accidentally emailed the narrator. And this was like 3 weeks ago, and he was like, "Hey, glad you liked the book. I didn't write it." And I was like, "Oh fuck!" And we got talking, and I was like, and he was like, "Do you want to have a narrator on your podcast?" I was like, "Fucking right, I do." So I just had him on. And
oh, I got to see this.
Yeah, and I'm putting you in touch with him so you can put your goddamn book up. So you can put Metamorphosis of Prime Intellect, because you know what? I just know. And I actually talked about it. I was like, there are a lot of books that I want on Audible that are not on Audible. So he told me to pass his email along to you. And yeah, no excuses, Roger. But yeah.
I will be in touch then, I guess.
Fucking right. How you doing, my man?
It's 2020. What the hell?
We're inching towards the end. We're inching towards it. Are we going to get out of it?
I wanted to say we had talked about today's topic, and you sent me a few texts about actors who might not want to be mentioned, and I totally understand that.
People, places, things.
Yes. No, I actually still work in these industries. When I talk about this, I'm not here to trash these industries.
Sure.
They are necessary. This is, it's more that because we live in a democracy, I think it is important for us to understand on an individual basis the things that are done on our behalf.
Yeah.
Because if we don't, then we will make bad decisions.
Yeah. And so for everyone listening, the topic we decided on was the food industry, or rather food preparation. And we started chatting about it.
Yes. Just industry in general. I wrote two articles for Corrosion back in the day. One called Plant, which was actually about chemical plants. And the other, Food Plant, which was about my observation, I have worked at these facilities for nearly 40 years as a contractor, and these were my observations of what it is like to live and work and in these environments. So it's not a condemnation to say, I observed there was some dangerous shit going on, yeah, or there is some weird social shit going on. It's more that this is going on,
Yeah.
So anyway, to start, let us talk about chemical plants. There are a lot of chemical plants in Louisiana, real close to me, a lot of them.
Okay.
And I've done work in a lot of them. So the thing about a chemical plant is most of them are open air. So all of the shit that does the magic is out in the weather. It gets rained on, because it's way too big to put in a building. And, you know, we have hundreds of plants like this here. So you've got what they call the racks that look like the Jolly Green Giant got some Erector Set parts and built stuff up, you know. So there's like levels, 20 feet, 20 feet, 20 feet. And those levels, they don't have actual floors that you would recognize. It's like there are these grid things of steel that you look down and they're, you know, it's like you can see right through them to the ground 200 feet below, if that's where you are. And they have tanks and reactors and all this piping. It's like a three-dimensional structure that basically the engineers designed to do the chemical reactant stuff to create the plant's product. And when someone like me shows up at this place, it's to work on a particular machine. We don't know what the fuck it does, or, you know, what purpose it serves or anything. It's more like, yeah, I'm here to work on the scale, you know, 1947A. Oh, yeah, that's a level 5. Now, this is something, I don't actually do this anymore. This is something I did when I was younger, stronger, and stupider. So you get on this elevator that has actually no protective mechanisms at all that you would expect. You know, it's like, you know, so it's this open frame thing where the walls are going by as you go up and down. And you get there and it's like you're 200 feet off the ground. And you're troubleshooting this thing, doing your thing, right? Yeah, okay. But meanwhile, there's this whole plant. What is it with the plant? There's a thing that happens in Louisiana often where a company comes in and says, we're thinking of spending $1 billion building a plant in your state. We'd like some conciliatory things. And so they give them tax write-offs benefits for the land and stuff like this and all. And then it ends up that this $1 billion plant. Now, $1 billion is not a lot of money for a chemical plant. All right, I want to get to that later in the talk. But so they spend $1 billion building this plant, and it creates like 100 jobs.
Yeah.
And 30 of those are from out of state because they're very highly skilled jobs.
Yeah.
And so they bring people in instead of them being from locals.
Yeah.
And this happens all the time. This is like, okay. This thing about a chemical plant. Now, I'm going to talk about two kinds of plants today, as I mentioned in the email. Chemical plants are a special kind of thing, and food plants. These are two types of plants that I've done a lot of work in. And back in the day when corrosion was a thing, I wrote two articles, plant, which is about chemical plants, and food plant. Duh. And one of the things is, like, if you are familiar with manufacturing, which you might be more familiar with being up north, we don't have a lot of manufacturing in the south. Mm-hmm. So that's yet another kind of animal, and it's kind of in between.
Okay.
But what I'm familiar with is chemical plants, lots of them, and food plants, lots of them.
Yeah.
So, all right. So the chemical plant takes in raw materials, generally stuff of the earth, or petroleum, and reacts it and messes with it in various ways that almost always involve high temperatures and high pressures in order to create new shit. Now, you are deep in euphemism zone when you hear the phrase uncontrolled energy release. Because that's what they say when you're taking the safety training and you're talking about it and all of the things that can go wrong. And yes, an uncontrolled energy release is a bad thing. Okay? It means that somebody fucked up somewhere. But, and they will defend that phrase to the teeth because it is more inclusive and it's more descriptive than some low-level phrase like, well, you know, or some of us would just say it sounds a lot better than explosion.
Yeah, yeah, right? It's like Elon Musk says. It didn't crash. It was a rap. It was a rapid disassembly.
Yeah, actually, Musk stole that from the Culture series books.
unplanned energy release.
Yes,
unplanned.
Uncontrolled energy release.
Uncontrolled energy. Okay.
So yes, so. Well, and the problem is that in these facilities, you have a lot of tanks and pipelines that contain things that are toxic, that are under tremendous pressure, and that, well, actually, those two things pretty much cover it all. If it's toxic, it's under big pressure. And they're brought together in these reactors under even bigger pressure and more, reactions. So there are actually two types of plants. The vast majority of them do what we call batch processes. So they have a bunch of staging areas which have the raw materials, and when they're ready, they bring them into the reactor, start everything going, eat them up, and everybody sits back, watches the gauges, and prepares to run for their lives. I'm not kidding about that. Well, in some plants they don't. But in some plants, they do.
Is there like a blast wall? Is there to prepare to run? So is there like a blast wall or something? Or is it like leave the premises of the building?
It depends on the plant. Most plants, modern plants, have actually the control room is a bunker.
Yeah.
It's a concrete building.
Sure.
With solid walls and all this shit. But I have been in plants where the control room was a tin shack on the second row of the racks.
Fuck that.
20 feet above ground.
Fuck that.
Okay.
Peace.
Well, funny you should mention that. Now, a couple of my coworkers, I wasn't there for this, but it's one of the funniest stories that I've ever heard. So they're in this place. And they're working behind the console, behind all the controls. So there's, the place where the guys sit, there's a control thing. Mm-hmm. And then our guys are working behind the control thing on the wiring and shit. And what happens is there's these stainless steel containers that are designed to be carried by forklifts. They're 4 feet square, 6 feet high. The container itself is stupidly, fantastically expensive. But because they're made of stainless steel, they're also shiny. And the forklift operator mishandled one of them. and it fell. And it caught the sun as it was falling.
Yeah.
And shone it into the control room.
Oh, Jesus.
And then made this crashing fucking enormous noise as it hit the ground.
Oh, shit. So they thought it was a uncontrolled and energy release.
So our guys come out, and it's like there's no one in the room. They're like, what the fuck? Where is everybody? No, the plant people had run for their lives.
Yeah, she's right.
They thought everything was blowing up. They didn't know what the fuck was happening. They ran for their lives, and our guys, popped up like, it's like, what?
Yeah, glinting light, big noise. Yeah, that's like the begin. That's the first pulse of light from the explosion that will now envelop the city.
Yeah. I mean, so you didn't. And the thing is, because we've been there. There was in the 1980s, a catalytic cracker at an oil refinery, Norco, exploded, and I was in Grand Isle, and I heard it 40 miles away. It blew out windows 20 miles away. Jesus. It blew out windows in New Orleans.
Jesus.
It destroyed structures around the plant in Norco. I mean, it just flattened them. And because this is a structure, it's like 16 feet diameter and 30 feet high, and it's operating like 2,000 pounds per square inch pressure to separate the oil components into their basic structures. I've actually talked to people who said the first time when they first powered it up, everyone ran for the corners, and it was like they didn't know it would actually work, but it did. It ran for years and years and years.
Yeah.
And but what they didn't know was that even though they inspected it regularly, there was one place where the piping did a loop that the cameras of the day couldn't reach, because of the day it was Viticons. We're talking about in the 80s. And they sort of assumed that, well, if everything else is cool, then this must be okay too. And what they found out after the thing exploded was that there was a vortex that was set up in that little loop of pipe that caused it to corrode faster than the rest of it. And so one day the thing blew up and took 7 people's lives.
Jesus.
My people were scheduled to be in the plant 5 hours after the explosion occurred to inspect their truck scale and do a quarterly thing. So these things are dangerous. There's toxic chemicals. They're under tremendous pressure. They are being staged. And in a lot of cases, even though they will all swear on a stack of Bibles that they are safety, 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 the thing is they are also get it done, get it done, get it done, mm-hmm. get it done. Mm-hmm. And so you've got they've brought in, to me, there is nothing more terrifying than a rail yard full of rail cars full of chlorine gas.
Fuck that.
In there.
Fuck that.
Okay. That is like terrifying.
Yeah. How much of that shit is, that's what I always think about, is how much of that shit is just like right over the hill, and you're just blissfully unaware.
Well, this is why we're having this discussion, is to let you know that maybe more than you think. So a typical chemical plant, you've got these inputs, mm-hmm. raw materials, some of which are harmless, some of which are not so harmless, and they're brought in trucks, on rail lines, and generally staged. The whole just-in-time thing that has taken over manufacturing hasn't really reached the chemical end of it because it's so fucking dangerous. So it's more like we want to get this stuff safed so that we can let the rail cars go on their way, yeah. Let the truck go on its way.
The amount of insurance they'd have to pay out probably negates any gains they would get doing just in time, right?
That's one of the things, yes. So anyway, they take their inputs, they pump them into reactors with high pressure, with high temperature, steam, whatever else it takes to make something new. And in a lot of cases, those go into more holding tanks because they're intermediate products. This is why these things are like, you know, 40 acres. Mm-hmm. You've got a whole slew of processes going on. One of the places that I work at regularly makes a shitload of ammonia and sulfuric acid. Now, they make these. These are intermediate products that they then ship to other facilities that need ammonia or sulfuric acid. But the reason they're making this shit is that they're also precursor products for the thing they're really making, which is the plastic that your countertop is made of.
But all the component pieces are this like hyper toxic shit.
Yes. And you know, and stored under high pressure and all this. Let's do the black and white, okay? Everything in your life that is black, your tires on your car, for example, are that color because of carbon black.
Yeah.
That is the pigment that makes things black. Nothing is blacker than carbon black. And carbon black is an extremely fine powder that gets into everything. Now, on one occasion, I was stuck in a carbon black plant for 2 days installing a machine. And when I got home, I looked like I was in blackface. I got into the bathtub after running a bath, and within 5 seconds of hitting the water was opaque.
Jesus Christ.
Just from carbon black coming out of my pores, I turned 8 bathtubs of water opaque black before it stopped happening.
This is your superhero background story. This is your moment.
Oh, I'm just getting started. To install one fucking checkwear, it's like I turned 10 bathtubs full of water black with the carbon black that was in my pores. Now, the people who work there all the time have all this PPE. It's like they cover themselves up with all this stuff. And you're looking at this as a contractor and going, is this really? No, actually, it is necessary. It would be a good idea. Okay. So, and the other thing about carbon black, though, is what's really nasty about it from my standpoint as the guy who is trying to make your equipment keep working is it conducts electricity. So it's really not a good thing for it to get onto circuit boards and into electronics.
Carbon black can conduct electricity?
Yes.
I don't know why in my mind I thought it was like chalk powder.
No, carbon is like carbon, you know, it's like the carbon rod in a battery.
Okay.
Yeah. Carbon conducts electricity.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
So,
Mr. Science Major right here.
So it gets into this shit and shorts things out.
Yeah.
And causes all kinds of problems. But then we go to the other end of the spectrum. Let's talk about titanium oxide.
Oh, fuck. That's in paint, right? Is it?
It's what makes things white.
Yeah.
It is the whitest chemical known to science.
It's DuPont, right?
I'm not mentioning company names here.
It's Poudant.
So, titanium oxide is the stuff that makes wedding cake icing white. It is so inert that it is a food additive. Because while it's not a nutrient, it doesn't poison you. It just passes through your system, and it's completely inert. Unlike carbon black can fuck your shit up because it gets into your lungs. It never goes away. It causes black lung. Titanium oxide isn't like that. Your body can actually take titanium oxide apart over time, and so it doesn't have these long-term health effects. It's considered much safer. And so it's a food additive. It's in paint. It's in anything in life that is white.
Roger, your racist undertones are disgusting.
I know.
You are just praising titanium oxide and saying that carbon black is disgusting. I just dog whistle, all right? I'm going to call you out.
But okay. Well, it's the thing is, all right, how do you make titanium oxide?
Yeah.
And this is one of the things. I said, I'm anonymizing my sources. Sure. I'm not talking about anybody.
That was my bad.
But
sorry.
If someone has some inside info, they're going to figure out real quick who I'm talking about.
Well, I just know that they're famous for that paint.
All right. So in order to make titanium oxide, this infamously benign, completely inert, harmless thing, when you start with the ore, you have to start by turning it into titanium chloride, which has the chemical symbol TiCl. Ti for titanium, Cl for chloride. And then they can reduce that to the what they call tickle to titanium oxide in another reaction. So the plant that makes titanium oxide, and it makes a shitload of titanium oxide. Titanium oxide is a big fucking product. They make a lot of it. Okay. But in order to make it, they have to make a lot of the intermediate product, tickle. And tickle has this annoying property that when it comes into contact with water, it turns into hydrochloric acid.
Just a little, just the fine print. Just that little. Hold on, turn off the thing. Just a little fine print. Don't look too into it. It just turns into. You know, we all have the little things about us. Some of us talk too much. Some of us have bad breath.
Kind of like phosgene, except it's instead of being a gas, it's a fine powder that easily becomes airborne. And so, when you take the site-specific safety shit, they tell you. Okay, you can't, if you get this powder on you, you can't just wash it off with water because it will turn into acid. So they have special towels all through the plant that are embedded with something. I don't even know what it is that neutralizes the tickle, so you can use them to wash yourself off if you get the tickle on you. And we had a guy who almost didn't get in the plant because every time in the orientation they said the words tickle towel, he fell out laughing.
Your tickle towel.
The tickle towel. Yes, you have to find the tickle towel station.
Yeah, that sounds like a South Park thing. Did you get your tickle towel?
But it's deadly serious.
Yeah.
So this is the, you know, and this is to make the shit that they use to make wedding gates white.
It's this, yeah.
It's not that I'm not here to trash any of these industries.
This is all shit we use.
They're all important. They're shit we use. They we need. There would not be 10 billion people on the earth, not all starving to death, if we didn't have all these industries creating the things that we need. But since we live in a democracy, I think it's also important to understand where our shit comes from.
Mm-hmm.
So that when we are asked to make a decision like, should we actually like have this thing like in Biloxi, that we can make an informed decision.
Sure.
And you know, it's like in your text, you mentioned that you know some insiders who have particular contacts in some mm-hmm. industries. I'm very interested in what they think of this talk.
Sure.
If they think that I went too far, it's like, what, you know, because I'm trying to be fair.
No, you're being, no, you're this. right now, you're fine.
Yeah. You know, it was like, I have been doing this for 35 years.
Sure.
And working in these industries, and some of the shit that I've seen is horrifying. But a lot of it is also necessary.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of it, it's, we have to have it.
Yeah. So it's, all right. I don't like what's happening in some ways, but on the other hand, I want to eat the cheap chicken. So
yeah. I mean, come on. It's like, dude, I think Foxconn is as bad as anyone, but I mean, am I willing to take my $800 iPhone and pay $8,000? No. Am I going to look the other way? Probably. And so are you, the listener, who's wearing AirPods right now.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? None of us are holier than thou. Because we're not against it. We can say we are, but we're not.
No. And so anyway, that's the thing. Is part of it is that in these industries, there are these insanely dangerous things. Like I said, you are truly in euphemism land when you hear the words uncontrolled energy release. But on the other hand, you are in, when you hear those words, you are probably about to enter that plant, and they really don't want you to die because it is a real frigging paperwork nightmare for them if you do.
It's a real pain in the ass.
It is. Now there is a plant upriver. I'm not going to get more specific, but for a while one of their other plants had an accident, and they rewrote their rules for doing electrical work, and the rewritten rules were so strict that in order to change an incandescent light bulb, you had to wear a flash suit and have a second standing by with a fire extinguisher.
A flash suit?
Yeah.
What's that?
Basically a bunny suit that is flame retardant and electrically inert.
Okay.
So yeah, you had to be decked out in this head-to-toe rubber suit with another guy standing by with a fire extinguisher to change an incandescent light bulb, like the one up there. Okay.
Again, that just sounds like South Park shit. All right, we're ready.
It kind of was.
Yeah.
And they kept that up for about 2 years.
Yeah.
And before they finally came up with a rationale to back it down. So there's a constant tension in these places because you can't get away from the fundamental fact that what they are doing is fucking dangerous.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they don't want the embarrassment of a Bhopal type scenario happening if they can avoid it. So whenever the possibility of something like that arises, then they get really fucking paranoid and crank everything down to 9 levels. But on the other hand, that's also expensive because they're paying us labor to get in the bunny suit, have a second guy there with the fire extinguisher and all this stuff to make a minor adjustment in their truck skill, which was a thing that was going on there for a while. So, but on the other hand, on the other hand, you know, it's like I've met people who were hosed down with toxic chemicals. They were in the wrong place when a pipeline burst, mm-hmm. Their valve failed, and you know, I've been in one plant where they would not let a woman in if there was any possibility that she might be pregnant because the chemical that they were handling there in huge quantities was an extremely dangerous teratogen.
Yeah.
And, you know, and so they were like, if there is any possibility at all that you might be pregnant, you cannot come in the plant.
And what, it was like, what's the word? Is it teratogen?
Teratogen.
Okay. And that causes birth defects?
Yes, it makes monsters.
Okay, I didn't.
That's the root of the word.
No, I know. I just learned a new word. Yeah, I just yeah.
Yeah, that was. It causes like, enormous like birth defects.
Carcinogenic. Yeah, yeah. Teratogen. Okay.
And so, you never know quite what you're getting into. And for me, it's like. It was a little different because if you work at one of these places, then you get drilled. You know exactly what the hazards are. Like one of the places where I occasionally do work, they make enormous quantities of sulfuric acid and
hydrochloric.
Ammonia. Ammonia. Yes. Because those are precursor products to the thing they're really making, which is the plastic that your countertop is made of. I'm not going to say exactly which plastic it is because that would identify the plant.
Okay.
But they make way more of the acid ammonia than they need because those are important precursor chemicals plants.
Yeah, you can't slow down you don't want to lose a single ounce of product by having not enough reactant.
Yeah, well, and also they sell those to other plants that need them, you know, that can't make their own ammonia, they can't make their own sulfuric acid, but they buy them from this other plant 10 miles down the road, you know. It's like, in fact, in a lot of cases they have a pipeline. It's like they're not even putting it on trucks. They have a pipeline from one plant to the other, and they have a valve.
Just an IV drip.
Yeah. So this is how things happen in this industry, particularly along the Mississippi River, because a lot of these places located here because of the river, because they have a lot of water. If they need it. If they need a lot of water, which sometimes they do, if they need it for cooling, or if they need to dump shit in it, then it's there. So we've got, you know, this whole petrochemical corridor up the Mississippi River from below New Orleans to well above Baton Rouge. And these places, a lot of them are interdependent. So this is just how it is. But The other interesting thing that I wanted to mention about chemical plants, yes, they're stupidly dangerous if you don't do everything right. But they also don't create a lot of jobs, because you'll see this news item. Big chemical company incorporated is going to build a $1 billion chemical plant in St. James Parish.
$1 billion.
$1 billion plant. Imagine the investment in our state.
The future is now.
Yeah. So, and we are, of course, because they're going to spend $1 billion, give them all types of tax concessions and this and that and all kinds of shit that they don't really.
Did we mention it's $1 billion?
Yes. Did we mention it's $1 billion?
With a
and
B.
When the sun sets and the dust fades, it turns out that it created 100 jobs.
But $1 billion.
For $1 billion plant. Because chemical plants are very highly automated.
Yeah.
So you go into one of these plants, there'll be 2, maybe 3 operators actually running the plates, the processes. Yeah, not the office. Now, office versus plant is a distinction everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Office is not the same as production.
No.
But in the production area, you might have 2 or 3 operators. The only reason you have more than one is so they can check each other's work and kind of tap each other and make sure they stay awake and shit. And you might have 5 or 6 maintenance guys whose job it is to check on shit when it don't go right. And that's it. So you've got $1 billion plant. You've got, during the daytime, maybe 10 people working there. You count all the shifts and everything. You've got maybe 100 employees total. That was what you gave up all this land and the tax concessions and everything for. And that's happened over and over again. And, it's like, welcome to Louisiana.
Yeah.
That's okay. So, and not to say it's even, actually, my personal experience is probably that we should be asking more from them.
Mm-hmm.
But who am I?
Yeah. It's definitely always easy for you and I to take this arm, myself definitely, to take this armchair view of this is what we should have and this is what, but I don't know jack shit about raising money to lay down the investment on an industrial plant. And I string together a podcast where most episodes are just me yelling like a psycho. I just so happen to have a MacBook and a nice microphone. Shout out Mitzi Purdue. As opposed to a soapbox on a Manhattan corner with shit going down my leg because I haven't had a home in a year. I just have a screen it's probably a lot. But because we can be brats about it, fuck it. Let's sit in our armchairs and dictate how the world should be, Roger. Right.
Well, one of us has actually been in a lot of plants. So, one of the things that I mentioned in the original plant article is that everything in an industrial plant is fabulously expensive.
Yeah.
A plant is an entire city made up of fabulously expensive industrial crap. And so, I have a little show and tell.
Fuck yeah.
What makes fabulously expensive industrial crap fabulously expensive? So, this here is a solenoid.
Okay.
This is not industrial crap. This is consumer grade crap. This is a coil that pulls the plunger in when you put electricity on the contact.
Mm-hmm.
And this thing, brand new, costs a couple of dollars. Something very similar to this is what unlocks your door when you enter the proper code in.
Okay.
Used to be what unlocked your car, but they've gone to a slightly different technology for that lately. The thing about solenoids, first of all, this is what's called an open frame design. You see, this is a bent piece of sheet metal. Okay? And the mechanism is open to the environment, mm-hmm. to the atmosphere. So shit can get into this thing.
Sure.
Okay? That's not optimal in a bad environment where you have a lot of contaminants, corrosive shit, and all that. But it's fine for opening your door in an office building or the door of your car or whatever. So what do you do if that's not good enough? Okay. Well, in plants, this is what you do.
Okay.
This is a pneumatic cylinder.
Okay.
And you put air in one end or the other. This is what's called a dual-acting cylinder. It can push and pull. And the nice thing about these is that the force that it presents is constant, no matter where the plunger is.
Okay, so it's not okay.
Okay, yeah. As opposed to the solenoid, where the force when it's out here is relatively weak compared to... Once it, you know, down here, it's relatively strong.
Okay.
If you want to be sure of exerting the force and you know what force you use, then you use one of these. The problem with this, well, there are several problems with it. First of all, this cylinder is worth about $40 as a new item. It's made of stainless steel, which is necessary because this is probably out in the problem area of your plant where there's all kinds of water and corrosive shit and stuff. And this cylinder is actually not all that much more capable than the solenoid that I showed you. It's just an air cylinder. But you also need air. Now, in an industrial facility, you will almost always have plant air. There'll be a ginormous air compressor and a network of plumbing feeding compressed air, just like we have electricity like in our houses.
Central plumbing or something.
Yeah.
Just with
in a plant, you'll have plant air. You'll have compressed air everywhere. But, well, how do you control this, though? Because a microprocessor can't blow into this thing.
Yeah.
So that's where this comes in. This is an air valve. In fact, this air valve was specifically designed to control cylinders just like the one that I just showed you. And you see all these ports here. The way that this thing works is that when it's not energized, the cylinder gets air at one end and is evacuated at the other. Okay? But when the solenoid is energized, it reverses. The solenoid, so the cylinder gets air pressure at this end and is evacuated at this end.
Okay.
These things are extremely common in industry.
The thing that one right there?
Yes. Well, like this. This is a whole family of things like this. This valve is an extremely small scale example of its family. And if it was new in a box with a factory warranty, it would cost over $100.
Okay.
The reason I have it is I bought it surplus.
Okay.
That's going to be a recurring theme for the next few minutes. So that's a whole way of doing things that simply isn't available to normal people because you don't have an air compressor in your house.
Yeah.
Now, the open frame design that I mentioned, the solenoid, gets a little more complex. This is a little more complex example of it. You can see that this is this an example. There's a pancake motor here, and there's a whole shitload of gears. This is an example of a very slow gearhead motor. You know, see a little coil here that's mm-hmm. part of the pancake motor mechanism. But of course, this is all open to the environment. Now, this is a little heavier than what I would normally see in consumer crap. This is the open, you know, the metal here is very heavy gauge. I suspect this actually came out of a retail display, which is kind of intermediate because it's a little more durable than consumer crap, but it also is expected to run for at least a year or so without failing too bad.
Yeah.
Now, you're wondering, what about the other side? Let's look at relays. This is a relay. Okay. Now, what this thing does is you put power, low current power, on a couple of pins here, and there's an armature that closes a contact. They can control much bigger power.
Okay.
This is a 10 amp relay. It's what it's rated for. So this one is a little unusual. It's got these terminals on the top. But the important thing is that these are circuit board terminals. This thing is meant to be mounted on a circuit board. You will never see anything like this in industry. Because if this fails, and because it has moving parts, it will fail,
mm-hmm.
then you have to replace the entire circuit board it's mounted on.
Yeah.
Nobody does component level anymore.
Okay.
In a similar vein, this is an automotive relay. Very similar characteristics to the one that I just showed you, except that it's got a 12-volt coil, and it's actually meant to be used in an automobile.
Okay.
And again, if this thing fails, the entire circuit board that it's mounted on is toast. Has to be replaced as an assembly.
Does that one have moving parts?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Inside this, there is just like... Okay. Actually, I can show you what it looks like. Because as we get into industrial, this is an industrial relay.
Fuck.
Now, the first thing you might notice about this, other than the fact that it's big, is that it's socketed so that when this fails, you can replace it. And if you look at this closely, you can actually see there is a coil mm-hmm. and a set of contacts in there.
Mm-hmm. It kind of looks like the vacuum tubes you showed me several episodes ago.
Yeah. Actually, and it's very similar because here's another one. And this socket is, in fact, exactly the same as the octal socket from the vacuum tubes.
Yeah.
So this is a technology that went on. But in industry, this is what you find. This is very expensive.
Yeah.
This relay, as a new item, costs about $20.
Okay.
And the socket is actually not much cheaper than that. Now, this, very similar, is a time delay relay.
Okay.
Now, the way that I got a hold of these things that I'm just showing you here is I intercepted them on the way to the dumpster.
Okay. I thought it was going to sound a lot more criminal.
I was like, it depends on the plant where you're working, how criminal it is, because in some of them, it's actually, you're not supposed to do that. But I was given permission in this case. This is about 25 years ago that I took these things out of service.
Okay.
So this is a time delay relay, which you energize it and it doesn't come on immediately. It waits for a period that you can adjust here before it comes on. Okay. And these are used to control industrial processes. And this device would be about $80.
Okay. So we're inching up.
Yeah. As a new item.
Roger, I gotta piss. Roger, will you monologue for 30 seconds?
I knew that was coming.
Hey, you know what? Roger and I are like an old married couple. We get to 1 hour. We get to 1 hour and I gotta go piss. And it's if that isn't love, I don't know what is. Roger, tell them where they can get your book. Metamorphosis Primate Act.
Metamorphosis Primate Act, available on Amazon. Basically anywhere you can get books, but if you go to lulu.com and buy it, it's the same price, but I get a lot more of the money. So, yeah, because Amazon doesn't get their cut. Lulu is the people who actually publish it. So, and I didn't get to mention this yet. Okay.
And we are back. Thank you for your patience, Roger.
Hey.
It really, honestly, man, I should just set like a, I should just get a countdown clock behind me, like a scoreboard. if a podcast goes to 60 minutes, I just start, all of a sudden I'm like, I gotta go so bad. Okay, but sorry. So we just did the $80 relay. All right.
So this is a consumer grade electric motor. You can see it's made of sheet metal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's got this little thing around it.
Uh-huh.
And this is an example of how a motor like that is used. This is the power unit from a battery-operated electric drill.
Okay.
That I took apart, and you can see the kissing cousin resemblance from the motor that I just showed you.
Kissing cousin?
Which is also a piece of crap.
What did you say?
Yeah.
A kissing cousin?
Yeah. Kissing cousin.
Is that the name of it?
No, they're...
Oh, I thought you meant like, yeah, it's incestual.
They're very similar. Kissing
cousin.
This is a southern thing.
Yeah, it's a, you know...
It's kissing cousin. You know, it's very similar. You know, they Actually, these do like stick together. So yeah. That's because they got magnets in them.
Yeah, my brother's sister is my girlfriend.
But if you want to know what an industrial motor looks like, this is an industrial motor.
Okay.
And the funny thing about this is that this motor is not all that much powerful, more powerful than the ones that I just showed you. But this one is intended to run forever or as long as possible.
Yeah.
It has ball bearings.
Okay.
These end caps on either side of the housing are cast. This is a motor that was meant to run as long as possible without being maintained. And like all industrial devices, it also has a tag on the side that tells you all of its properties.
Okay.
What its voltage is, what its power is. Now, this is not a very powerful motor. This is only an 8-watt motor, which makes it like 1/100 of a horsepower, which makes it about the same as this motor in the drill, except that one's meant to run continuously.
Okay.
The drill motor is, you know, not so much. But you also notice there's not anything on this motor that tells you what it is or anything like that. It's just like, if you don't know what I am, fuck you. That's, you know, that's consumer grade crap.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, industrial crap tells you, know, it's like everything is documented.
Yeah. And it's, so the other one, like you said, only 8 watts, but its selling point is it just goes.
Yeah.
Just goes,
and it also weighs about 5 pounds.
But again, it's a tank. It's a tank.
Yeah. Though, right? I mean, yeah. This is like, I could kill somebody with this. This is a serious piece of metal.
Hey, man.
These things, not so much.
If you're if you're angry enough and you strike enough times, anything is a weapon.
Well, with this, not really.
So what about something like the motors on like the Mars rovers?
Space vehicles are a very special case, and I read some articles about that because weight is so important for them.
True.
You would never find a motor like this on a space vehicle because it's so fucking heavy.
But something like the Mars rover, you can't have it breaking down, right?
Well, it's like... That is one of the reasons space shit is so so expensive, because it can't fail, but on the other hand, it can't be too heavy. And so one of the, you know, I think it was Path, you know, in the Pathfinder thing, I read an article where they were interviewing one of the guys, and he said, you could take any typical actuator mechanism from a spacecraft and crush it with your hand.
Probably, yeah.
It would be that light. It was Pathfinder, because they had this thing with the pedals that would fold out, and they said that was, you know, like one of the most intensely strong actuator mechanisms that they had ever built for a spacecraft, because normally you only build it to be just as strong as it needs to be, because weight is such an issue. But in that case, they didn't know how it was going to hit the planet. Yeah. They didn't know what orientation it's going to be in, and it's got to be able to unfold itself and all this.
So
that was a special case. But for the most part, spacecraft mechanisms are actually extremely delicate.
Mm-hmm.
They are just strong enough to do exactly what they are designed to do, and no stronger than that, because any more material. This actually brings us to another thing, which is that matter is expensive. Stuff is expensive. Even dirt is expensive. One of the things about this valve, okay, this thing weighs close to a pound.
Okay.
All right. And this is metal. And one of the things you'll notice about it is that it's meant to be taken apart. There's a knurled knob here that can be used to take the solenoid off the end. There are screws here and here, which can be used to disassemble it. This was machined out of a block of metal.
Okay.
And while this one isn't, I've seen these that were machined out of blocks of stainless steel,
okay,
which makes them seriously, stupidly expensive.
Yeah.
This material is ultra high density polyurethane plastic. Okay. Which I will get to in a minute. Everything about this valve is expensive. This is not a very big valve. It doesn't have much capacity, can't pass much air, but somebody spent a lot of money to make sure that it could make this thing do its thing. Mm-hmm. And the only reason I own it is because it was surplus. Somebody took a lot of them out of service all at the same time so that they were able to offer them to Electronic Gold Mine or someplace like that. Mm-hmm. And I snagged it for a project that I thought I was going to do that I ended up not doing. So there we are. But it's still a cool artifact. I mean, it's like, this is a cool technological artifact. Mm-hmm. And I do know exactly what this is for and why it exists and all that. And one day, hell, I might need to push something. I do have an air compressor.
Yeah.
It doesn't run all the time, but whatever. So anyway, that's, oh, I did have one more.
Fuck yeah. What is that?
This is a bank of 16 IO units. It's called an Opto 22 breakout board. And each of these modules is either an input or an output. And they're meant to interface with a microprocessor or something like that that would plug into this connector here. And the reason for the name Opto is that they're optically isolated. Now, this board is about 50 years old.
Really?
Yes. And you can get an exact replacement for it today. These modules the black ones are outputs. When the microprocessor energizes them, they act like switches and turn on current. In these cases, because they're black, that means they're 110 volt ones. Red ones would be DC. These are 110 volt inputs. White ones would be DC. Mm-hmm. This board would allow you to mix and match them. The reason that there's eight of these and eight of these has to do with the thing that was plugged in here that had that pattern. This board itself doesn't have any active components.
Okay.
It's just a carrier. It's extremely high quality. This board, you can still buy one of these today. An exact replacement for this. It's about $120. These modules are about $20 a piece.
Okay.
And I have this one because I intercepted it on the way to the dumpster. We replaced it with something that was at the time more modern. But I kept it because I was thinking of doing a home control project.
Sure.
That I never actually did. It would have been fucking cool if I had, though. Because this is like industrial grade crap.
And what is it about that makes it so that 50 years later you can still buy an exact replacement? Like, obviously something like a phone, you know, you wouldn't buy a 5-year replacement, but that is, you're saying 50 years. What is it about it that is that just that's it? That's the hotspot.
Well, it's all intended to be replaceable. This is the thing about industrial shit, is that it is intended to be serviceable and replaceable. Mm-hmm. So you might notice each of these modules has a little screw here.
Yep.
Okay, they're replaceable. The board itself is also replaceable.
The green. What is that? The green shit? Because that's on all, like, from my simpleton caveman mind, all electronics are on that green thing. What is the green thing?
The green thing is fiberglass. Okay. It's a circuit board.
Okay.
It's an extremely high quality circuit board. Okay. Same thing as in your DVD player or your computer, except that it's only two layer and it's very, very thick and durable.
Okay.
It's actually made of fiberglass.
Okay.
The Opto modules are meant to be replaceable. The board itself is meant to be replaceable. And one of the reasons I have this one is that there is a new generation that has different modules that is more popular now.
Okay.
But you can take that new generation. This connector is compatible with the new one. So you can take the new one. That requires you disconnecting all these wires here.
Sure.
Okay, and putting them on the new board, but it does the same thing. So this is basically the industry's answer to how to connect a computer running 5-volt signals to motors and solenoids and shit like that.
Okay.
They're also optically isolated. None of these have an electrical connection. If you trace this, these connections to the outside world do not have any electrical connection to these microprocessor signals.
Okay.
They're all optically isolated. So the you can get hit by lightning.
And it'll be fine.
And it'll stop here.
Fuck.
This is like $400 with the modules and the board, the carrier board and everything. And this is nothing for a plant. This is the normal way that things like this are done in a plant environment where you have stuff that has to be serviced quickly, where downtime might be exactly. So the problem with things like this, which I showed you earlier, is this is mounted on a circuit board.
The whole thing's fucked.
The whole thing's fucked. Exactly.
Okay.
So when this fails, you're screwed.
So that piece is the MacBook and the other pieces are PC that you can remove and replace versus your MacBook, the whole thing's fucked.
That's a way of looking at it.
But really?
So this is about industrial versus consumer.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a good thing to also remember that automotive is consumer.
Okay.
Anything. This assembly that I have, I'm not quite sure where this came from. I got this surplus. It's like if I energize it one way, it spins around to a stop. If I energize another, it spins around in the other direction to a stop. This is very similar, though, to a lot of automotive assemblies that I've seen. You can see the telltale thing here. There's obviously a little electric motor in this part. But this plastic assembly, they're doing a lot of shit like this in cars nowadays. For things like the actuator that unlocks your hatchback, that unlocks your door locks and stuff. They're not using the solenoids so much because these are more controllable. But on the other hand, these are made of plastic.
Yeah. So if we're looking at, we got consumer, we got industrial, space, right? That's the kind of hyper high end. Is there a fourth? Would you say like military applications, where maybe you're not constricted by weight, but you still want this thing to be able to last forever?
Yeah, military is its own thing, okay. And I don't have very many examples of that, okay. Because I used to have a few things in electronics, but yeah, there's a very hyper durable thing that the military wants. If you look at any electronics, mm-hmm. then there's always a mil-spec version,
sure.
that has higher temperature ranges. Not limited by
you're not fighting you don't have that primary barrier of space, which is the gravity well, delta V. So this thing can't weigh like a uranium block.
But right, exactly. The mil-spec stuff tends not to be like super lightweight, space stuff. But space stuff is in a whole category by itself.
That's why it's called rocket science, right? It's
but there is mil-spec stuff that is like super durable, but is also heavy. It's like this assembly here weighs about 4 pounds.
Yeah.
And I'm using my super duper calibrated hands to do that because I work for a scale company. But this is a very heavy thing for what it looks like.
Yeah.
So you wouldn't put that on a spacecraft.
But because if you were on like a destroyer, right, a big old ship, you might not be cared about weight. You just want this thing that's going to last throughout war.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. Okay. And or in a plant where you have massive energies flowing all around and mm-hmm. big things going on, and what you're concerned about is not the cost or the weight of it, but whether it's going to work correctly when you need it to.
So consumer, industrial, space, mil-spec. Is there a fifth? Is there like below industrial or below consumer, like disposable?
Well, there are a couple of different grades of consumer.
Made in China.
One of the things I learned talking to one of my suppliers, one of the manufacturers that I represent, we were talking about their supply issues, and he mentioned that there is a special grade of capacitor that is made for cell phones that is cheaper and crappier than the normal capacitors that are made for normal consumer electronics. And it's because they expect your cell phone to be discarded within a couple of years.
Fuck.
So there is actually a grade of electronic components that is crappier than what you would find in like your DVD player that is meant for cell phones because cell phones are considered disposable.
Yeah, you're tossing it, right? Yeah, the one you pick up at the airport because you lost yours, right? And it's got 100 minutes on it.
Yeah, well, it's because, that's like, I only got an i6. It's like, now the 11 is available. What the...
I got this one last Christmas, and it's I already split the screen on it, right? And it's
like you're gonna drop it. You're mm-hmm. gonna you're gonna want a better one anyway. So so this guy was telling me, this is an engineer saying, we don't even have access to this if we wanted to.
Oh.
But they were telling me that it existed, that there's a whole special grade of components that is super cheap and crappy quality for the cell phone.
Planned obsolescence. Actually, I don't know why. I mean, I would say that like I probably have the range of like hard drives, right? I got my industrial size ones, right? My 16 terabyte that I can just flip shit on and off. I got my SSD in this laptop. 256 gigs, pretty decent. And then I've got the tanks. I've got I wish this company would sponsor me. ADATA, ADATA. That one I have is waterproof, not water resistant. It's waterproof up to 2 minutes submerged underwater. It's fireproof, it's shockproof, dustproof, and it has a metal shell on it that can survive 3,000 kilograms of downward pressure. That would be like my mil-spec, right?
That is actually mil-spec type of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
It has to be capable of withstanding, like being in a tank that got hit by an anti-armor shell.
Yeah, right. Space spec would be like a micro SD made of like gallium arsenide, so it survived radiation, but it also weighed like a quarter of an ounce, right? Okay, I'm using my mind to get a grasp on it. All right.
So anyway, to get back to industry. Let's talk about food.
Okay.
There's a tremendous contrast between chemical plants, mm-hmm. which have very few employees, very well paid. The jobs out in the plant tend to be union. So these guys are making $25-$30 an hour with the overtime, double time, all the perks, you know, vacation, all that shit. But they may only have 30 or 40 of those guys in a $1 billion plant. Then we go to food processing, which I know is a sensitive thing. Okay. So the thing about food processing, food plants are very finely grained social dioramas. They are everybody has a place above and below someone else. Mm-hmm. And it could be a little weird when you first enter a food plant, figuring out where you fit in. Mm-hmm. There's all kinds of little signals of status. Because a food plant will have hundreds of employees.
Yeah.
And the reason is that in the chemical plant, you have control over your raw materials.
Yeah.
So you can automate everything. In a food plant, your raw materials are living things.
Yeah.
They vary. So there's a limit to how well you can automate things. And ultimately, you end up having to have a whole shitload of human beings with knives in their hands finishing the job, even if you have automation starting it.
Yeah.
And there is hardly a job I can imagine more soul-crushing than being a line operator in a food plant.
Because
you're doing, it is repetitive stress injury hell. You're doing the same thing day in, day out. You're doing it in miserable conditions. It's probably a refrigerated room. You're decked out in all of this plastic PPE. Not to protect you, but to protect the food that you're working on from you. And it pays like $8 an hour.
Yeah.
So it's just a miserable, horrible way to live. And people come here from all over the world to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. Fast Food Nation by Eric Schlosser, for everyone listening. There's a great audiobook on it. He goes through the entire poultry and beef industry. It's insane, yeah.
Yeah, so you're ahead of me there because you've read that book. And my observation is that, okay, in the chemical industry, you wear PPE, what they call personal protective mm-hmm. equipment, to protect you mm-hmm. against the environment.
Mm-hmm.
So you have eyewear. In fact, every industrial environment now requires eyewear. Hat, hard hat, because you're ducking into all these spaces with crap. There's all these levels above you. Someone might drop something on you. Steel-toed shoes, similar thing. Okay. In the food industry, it's not about protecting you so much. as about protecting the food that you are working with.
Yeah.
So you're wearing all this plastic shit, the gloves, the footies, the whole smock and everything. And that is part of the culture.
Mm-hmm.
Your position in the culture, wearing PPE means you are low caste, you are low status.
Yeah.
Okay. Technicians, which is where I operate when I would go into one of these places, I would be about the same as a service technician, the guy who fixes shit. They still have to wear hair nets because hair in the food is bad. They still have to wear eyewear. They still have to wear steel toes, but the rest of it is more optional because it's more important for them to be able to work with their hands, mm-hmm. pick stuff. And get my thoughts in a row here.
Social hierarchy.
Yeah. The technicians, they have the latitude to move around the plant.
Yeah.
And the ability to move around the plant is a big source of status in the social hierarchy because the line operators are not permitted to move around. They have to stand at a station all day long, except for certain break periods, doing whatever they're doing with the birds or the catfish or whatever. Even taking a bathroom break is an issue. And the maintenance guys, well, they come and go at will. So they have actually a little office, shared office area where they can have a picture of the wife and all that shit.
Sure.
Probably shared with a few other guys, unless you're the maintenance manager, in which case they might have a little private office where they can, they have a computer terminal where they can, do the purchase orders and buy shit, or whatever. Then there's, things like, are you permitted to come in the front of the plant? Or do you have to go in the back of the plant?
Okay.
All office jobs are higher status than any plant jobs. The sole exception to that is that you will find the plant manager who runs everything, dressing out in the gear, going out on the plant floor to see what's going on because it's his fucking plant.
He's the plantation owner, right?
Yes. And he will don the protective gear because he has to go out and see what the fuck is going on in his place. And that doesn't ding his status. Well, but for the most part, wearing PPE dings your status.
Unless you're top dog, right? That's like the general walking to the front lines and he's covered in mud, but it's the fucking general, right? He can talk shit. He's walking up and down the trenches, but it doesn't matter because he's a boss. But all of us with all the doughboys and our muskets, no, we're shit. But this guy's going out there. What are you doing? What are my minions doing? I just imagine he's some 1800s.
Why is this line not running? What is wrong?
You will feel my wrath.
And if you're one of the technicians, then he's like, you, why is this thing not working? And I've been there more than once myself. It's an extremely fine-grained social hierarchy. And that has been true of every food plant I have ever been in, regardless of whatever food they are processing, because the requirement of a food plant is that there's a lot of labor.
Yeah.
Because food, the source product, is variable.
Mm-hmm.
So machines don't completely deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
no matter what you do. And that translates to everything else. So I know you got people who are probably going to have a comment about that. I'm very interested to hear what they say about what I'm saying about this, because it's like, I have never been in a food plant.
Sure.
It was not an extremely fine-grained social hierarchy where if you were hired as a line operator and you walked in the front door of the office, everyone would look at you like you were from Mars and like you did something very, very wrong.
Well, like, what got
you're not supposed to be here.
Yeah, what got me thinking was, is I worked at, he's been on this podcast before once, my friend Joe Udell, who I've known since sixth grade. His dad had a door frame manufacturing warehouse in Atlanta. An odd thing, but we used to work there when I was like 15, 16. But yeah, you had, we were shipping and receiving, and we were, yeah, we were the shittiest of the, right? We had to have those like cut-proof gloves, jeans, mask, goggles. Step above was the technical guys that could use power tools. We weren't even allowed to do that. Step above them was like the drivers. And then a little section of the entire warehouse was an air-conditioned, blocked-off area. That was the office. Everyone had a chair. You had, you know, you had nice overhead lights, a tie. And yeah, there were tiers of that. Yeah, and it was very much, yeah, if you walk into the office and you, hey, Mr. Udell, how you doing? And he's in a suit, but you're walking in, you're covered in sawdust and sweat. It was almost like, what is this? What is this undesirable doing in my office, right? Gods, and, take them away. But really, social structure, right? It was, we were replaceable. It was like, you know, fuck you.
Yeah, and the whole food industry is like that. And
I should clarify, that wasn't a dig at Mr. Udell. I was 16 and I probably shouldn't even been working there. That I was incredibly grateful for that job. But I mean, but the observation still stands, is the gratification.
Exactly. And the thing is that most people who work in food plants are actually grateful for that.
Sure.
Tyson goes trialing in the Marshall Islands, for example. You know, I was in a Tyson plant in Arkansas where they had a fucking translator.
Jesus.
For Marshallese.
Jesus.
For the specific language of the Marshall Islands, because they had hired so many people, brought in so many people from this one area. And so, but of course, then these people are almost slaves.
Yeah.
Because where else can they go?
Well, and Eric Schlosser talks about them. The illiterate. They can't read, they can't write, they can't speak the language. They are, I mean, they are the lowest, they are the undesirables.
Mm-hmm. They're not the lowest, though. The lowest is truck drivers.
Okay.
Every plant that I have ever been in, even food plants that had line operators from the third world, truck drivers were beneath them.
Really?
Yeah, it's almost weird.
I would think that having like a license would be like a step up. I'm just looking at it purely from like a stratification. I don't know, maybe them though, it's like they don't even get the respect of like a sleep schedule. It's just like, fuck you, pick it up and leave.
It's just, I can't even completely explain it myself. Okay. But what I can say is that these guys are whatever else there is in the plant, if you drive a truck up, you are whale shit to them.
Okay.
Probably because even the line operators have learned to follow the rules. They understand. Well, for one thing, if you don't follow the rules, you're going to get fired in about 2 seconds flat. So they conform, but the truck drivers, they don't know what to expect from these guys. So they're okay. Just like, we gotta deal with this shit. So there's a truck driver place, and the truck drivers are not allowed anywhere except the driver lounge. If you're a line operator, which is about like the lowest position, you know, it's like you've got to stand at this place 8 hours a day except for breaks. cutting fillets and shit.
Mm-hmm.
That is like, you would think that's like the lowest thing, but truck drivers are lower than you.
Okay.
That is one thing you can look in the mirror and tell yourself when you're dressing out to go home, is at least I'm not a truck driver.
At least I'm not a truck. Right. Yeah. Cause you're right. They're not even regulars. Right. So they don't even get the respect of being part of the cast.
Some of them are, but most of them aren't. Yeah. So, but it's like, yeah, for whatever reason, that is like the bottom step on the totem pole is being a truck driver. I can't always explain it because I've actually met some truck drivers who are fairly literate and intelligent and all, but the rule is that's not what they expect.
Sure. But on a small side note, it's apparently becoming a thing over the last 10 years. These truck drivers are just getting Audible subscriptions. And so you're getting these guys now that are just getting like degree after degree. And like, cause they just, so it's awesome. You got these guys driving and they come out and they're just like, they are like, they're getting like their doctorate in Prussian military history. It's the universe has a sense of humor. It's just like, fuck it. This guy can learn everything. It's kind of weird how it flips, right?
Nothing but time. And
well, think about the invention. Think about the Otis elevator, right? Originally in skyscrapers, first in Chicago and then in Manhattan. The richest people, bottom floors, because you don't want to walk upstairs. That's below you. I mean, figuratively. And then with elevators, all of a sudden it was like, okay, now you want that because now you want the view. You don't have to walk. But originally, first floor, that was penthouse, because you could walk right in and out. Come the elevator, the entire thing flips. You could almost say it's like truck drivers, right? It's like, yeah, now it's Audible, and it's like, now these are like the bohemian scholars. They drive all day, and they're, oh, yes, I agree with Neil deGrasse Tyson's assertion about black holes colliding. Little side note. But, yeah, it kind of flips, right?
And you got to remember, too, most of what I'm giving you here is from 15, 20 years ago.
Sure.
So there is because my job has also flipped to where I'm almost doing everything office wise now. Yeah. I'm not doing nearly as much field work as I used to.
Yeah.
In some ways though, things don't change. That's, there's too much inertia.
Uh-huh.
And the basic thing of poor people being ground down
mm-hmm.
by people who have power over them isn't really changing.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got in a lot of these places, these immigrants who have been literally brought here to almost be servants. And if they decide they're not cool with it, what the fuck are they going to do? They can't just like get on a plane and go home. They don't have the resources to do that. They're stuck. And this is a thing, a certain chicken company whose name starts with T is really bad about.
Tyson, you can say it. Tyson Chicken. They are the evil empire.
Yeah. And one of the striking things about them is the degree to which they deploy propaganda toward their own employees. One of the things, you see these things every once in a while in your career that just stick with you. And one of them was a poster that I saw in a tea plant, that showed a sad-looking dog sitting next to a food bowl full of greasy gears and, machine parts. And the big caption was, not even good enough for a dog. Now, this isn't a plant that kills 250,000 birds a day. Okay? Now, when you're dealing with a product stream that large, you have a lot of stuff that ends up, hitting the floor, for example. product hits the floor, it's no longer suitable for human consumption. Period. End of story. Can't, you know, hit the floor. But it's still okay for the pet food industry, mm-hmm. for the animal feed industry. So the purpose of that poster was to remind people not to contaminate the contaminated food stream with stuff that really wasn't edible, because the contaminated food stream was itself a source of profit going to the pet and animal feed industries.
Jesus. And I know in Fast Food Nation, they talk about feeding like pieces of cows that would hit the ground. They'd put it in the trough for the cows. So they would just have mm-hmm. the cows eating, and instead it led to all sorts of fucking diseases and shit.
Yeah. Well, that's a way to, well, you don't see that so much in like chicken. You know, I haven't done very much work at all in red meat plants. Mm-hmm. Are you talking about like cows and pigs?
Sure.
Almost all of the stuff I've done in food processing has been catfish and chicken. And catfish is almost dead now. That's gone because of competition from overseas. So a great deal of that manufacturing isn't there anymore. So there's a lot of, you know, stuff that I built, stuff that I put online and all, not there anymore. But the chicken plants pretty much are still there as they were before that, the sea change. A lot of that was like the influx of the Vietnamese imports.
Mm-hmm.
But chicken is what it always has been as far as you've got the whole way that it's the grow houses are run, the processing plants are run, and where I've always been into it was the processing plants.
Mm-hmm.
And mostly there where I was chronically, you know, printing labels, stuff like that. But you can't ignore how the whole operation runs.
Yeah.
You know, there's, well, to give it a slightly different allegory, the second day that I worked for the company I work for now, 35 years ago, I took a service call. The guy who was training me at a plant that made the patties for a certain fast food restaurant. And this is actually one of the cleanest food plants that I have ever visited, although I didn't understand that at the time. They took in sides of beef, put them in enormous grinding machines, and turned them into hamburger patties on an industrial scale.
Yeah.
And it was about a month after that site visit before I was able to make myself eat another hamburger.
Oh, Jesus. That bad?
Because the smell of blood pervaded the air. It was like, and even though it was an incredibly clean plant,
sure,
it didn't have a kill floor. There was no guts and intestines and shit on the floor, which I have seen incidentally,
yeah,
you know, in other places. It was very clean and well run, but just that pervasive smell of death was something I had never experienced before. And now I was like, yeah, I have an ice cream sundae afterwards. Like, I'm fine with it. But at the time, I had never experienced anything like that. I hadn't even known that it was a thing that was possible.
Yeah.
And to just like be thrust into it, and it's like, this is whole building full of just meat being ripped apart.
Just, yeah.
And it's actually impossible to describe. Like I said, the best description is it was a month after that before I was able to make myself eat another hamburger because of having experienced that and not having been used to it. Now, on the flip side of that, I will say humans seem to be able to get used to anything.
Mm-hmm.
And we, you've got people exposed to things like that, people who are in death camps.
Well, I was about to say, think of the Sonder Commandos, S-O-N-D-E-R. Those were the Jews that the Nazis would basically go easy on because they'd have them do the dirty work, including going up to the bodies of all the recently deceased via Zyklon B gas inmates in the showers, go up with hammers and hit the gold out of their mouths. Blood and all, just hit them out. Because you got to remember, they just died from gas. So, I mean, their bodies are still warm and, you know, wet and alive, if you will. But you know what I mean. Go up and hit their mouths with hammers. And there's
That's the thing. And what I experienced in those first days with my employer was extremely mild.
Yeah.
By comparison. And it was hard for me to wrap my head around it at first. But on the other hand, now that I've been doing it for all these decades, stepping over little bloody gibbets of intestines and shit and a catfish plant, it's just like, whatever.
What I was going to say is there's an anecdote of one of these Sonder commandos the Nazis would always kill him after a couple months because they didn't want him like getting uppity. But some of them survived, obviously, when the camp started getting liberated. And so there's a story of one of them saying he'd been doing – this was his job. He'd go in with a mallet and just go beat the shit out of these dead bodies' mouths and rip the bloody teeth out that had gold. And one day he was doing it, and he didn't even realize till he was, like, pulling the gums and roots out of his mouth that it was his wife. And he was like,
I think I saw that story.
He was
like,
and I didn't even realize it. And he was like, and I'll be honest, it didn't really register. He was just like, I recognize that face. On to the next bot. I mean, it seems like you can just adapt to, maybe it's the brain protecting itself.
Well, it's that you have to adapt to the environment you're in.
Yeah. Yeah. You have.
And we're very good at that.
Yeah.
And I think that that's part of the thing. It's like, you know, being in an extremely dangerous environment, like a chemical plant, where, you know, and I've told people for years, I am very glad that I don't actually work in one of these places because that would suck.
Yeah.
Now, I have a couple of friends who do work in these places. And the thing is, to say, you know, as someone who works there occasionally, the chance that if the place blows up, I'm going to be there when it happens is not that big. But if I work there every fucking day, then my chances of being there when it blows up are actually pretty goddamn good. And that's
near
scary.
Near certainty.
So, yeah, it just depends on what shift it happens on. Actually, when the oil refinery blew up in Norco, we had a crew that was scheduled to check the truck scale that morning. The refinery blew up at 4 in the morning, and we had been scheduled to be there at 7 a.m.
Fuck that.
So even that, you know, it's like you're still not completely safe. But on the other hand, if you were one of the shift workers who was there every day, then your chance of being there when it blows up is like 20 or 30%, because, you know, somebody has to be there. And and the thing about that, It was an interesting thing because it's catalytic cracking unit. It's pressure vessel, like 16 feet diameter, 30 feet high. It's got all these pipes feeding it. And one of the, you know, and of course they made a point of periodically checking it out with video cameras. But there was one sharp turn in a pipe that they couldn't get to with the videos, you know, with the video surveillance. And they just assumed that because everything else was okay, that, well, that pipe must be okay too, most likely. But it turned out that there was a vortex that formed in that turn, and it was corroding faster than the rest of the structure. That was the point where the explosion began.
Yeah.
And, you know, there is a tension in all of industry between technicians and engineers. Mm-hmm. You'll hear technicians say engineers are stupid and engineers saying technicians are morons. And I have been trained from both ends.
Yeah.
Of that.
Yeah.
So the problem is that engineers are trained to think of how things work. They're trained to say, we start here, we get to this next step, we get this next step, we get this next step, then we get a product. That's how they're trained. They're trained to think of how things work. They're not trained to think of how things fail. Mm-hmm. Now the technicians are trained to think of how things fail because they've got to put it back together after the thing fails. Mm-hmm. So it's the technician that says, this dumbass engineer put a bolt here where I can't get a fucking spanner on it to get it loose. Now that it's failed, to take this assembly apart and fix it. The engineer says, if the bolt wasn't there in that place, then the thing would fall apart. That's where it needed to be to absorb the stress. So you've got, and I understand both of these things, but you're in a room with both engineers and technicians, all I can say is fucking duck.
Yeah. I was going to say, that's what, you know, Skunk Works of Lockheed Martin, you know, obviously, I know you know. That's what Kelly Johnson, the first head of it, used to talk about. He said that's what made them so efficient, is that there was no separate areas. You didn't have the designers and then the metallurgists and then the guys putting it together. No one was allowed to be more than, like, I think it was something like 15 feet from, like, the next person in line. So if you drew up this schematic for this wing and then the next guy had to make it out of aluminum, it didn't just go to him.
This isn't going to work.
Well, that's what he had him there. He said he would have it so that you could turn around and be like, instead of like, hey, this needs to go back to the drawing division, you turn around and be like, hey, dipshit, what is this? And he would come over and be like, I don't think. And he said, but that's the reason why they could just get shit out, because everyone was
That's brilliant. Yeah. I didn't know that, actually.
Kelly Johnson was a fucking genius, man.
But it's brilliant and it makes perfect sense. Yeah. That's, I mean, having worked in industry for decades, I can say that is exactly the problem.
Yeah.
That you've got people that write a specification, it gets signed off by management. I had beautiful example here. Okay, so I designed a system around 1990 to weigh trucks in and out of the largest sugar refinery in the United States. And it was enormously complicated. We had meetings after meetings after meetings with the top guys, everybody. And we nailed down this thing. This thing was collecting like 150 items of information about for every truck, and which was unheard of at the time. This was way ahead of its time. course I did it. But we went to put it in. We installed the computer. We put everything in. We established communications. We since everything's going. And the very first truck, okay, the driver comes in, gives the operator his driver's license. The operator looks at it, goes, well, how do I enter this guy's driver's license number in? And I'm like, you have a 10-digit field there. That's why it's like, you know, this guy's from New York. New York, they have 14-digit driver's license numbers. They had talked to everybody except the actual operators who operated the system. And that was like the very first thing. It was the very first truck. This guy was from New York. He had a 14-digit driver's license number. We had a 10-digit field to enter it into. And I ended up spending the next 3 days on site rewriting everything after we talked to the operators to deal with all of the things that the supervisors didn't even fucking know about what their own system had to do.
Yeah. Yeah. But it seems like that's the case, right? Because I think that's something Kelly Johnson talked about. Is he said when they, Lockheed Martin and Roger, let's wrap this one up in 5 minutes because I got an early one tomorrow.
Okay.
But that's one thing he talked about was they had something like 11,000 engineers design when Lockheed tried to get into like the commercial airline business. They had something like 11,000 engineers, and I shit you not, for the U-2 spy plane, they had something like 70. And it's because one was Skunk Works and one wasn't, and then they just cut out all the middle shit because they were like, everyone has to be right here. So when they'd start designing something, you'd have the metallurgist just going, before you even finish drawing it, like, we're not doing that. It can't be done. And so they'd be like, all right, fuck. So they just cut out all this bullshit middle ground.
Yeah. That's, you know, kind of what you have to do to make it work.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that's how you get an SR-71 Blackbird is when you have that those guys, right?
Mm. Yeah. Oh, by the way, when are you going to get like lighting again?
Oh, I have it. Oh no, I got it. I just in the afternoon.
I mean, it doesn't give you a headache and shit like that.
Oh, I mean, I can just turn on the. I don't know. Sometimes I just when I do a late episode with you, sometimes I just flip the lights because I just like. To relax. It's night. It's after hours. Call in with your music requests. Smoke a cigar. Drink some whiskey. TPC after the sun goes down. I last time I had a headache. This time I was just like, I don't know. Fucking the vibe. There's absolutely no reason for it. I can turn on bright lights.
I mean, it's like, I got no room to talk. It's your podcast. It's your joint.
Fuck you, Roger. It's your podcast. When are you going to start a podcast? I was thinking this morning about it. I was like, I'm going to upload all the episodes I did with Roger onto an account and just give you the login and be like, give you the keys to your own kingdom. Not that I don't fucking love having you on. I just think you could absolutely rock your own podcast. But it comes down to whether or not you want to, and I'm not going to force that on you. I don't know why.
I still got it. Yeah, it comes down to the whole thing again. I have a real job. Yeah. I have a normal job.
Yeah.
And that's enough at the time.
Yeah.
But I do appreciate the offer.
Of course, my man.
Maybe one day.
One day. Roger, you would be happy. Remember how last time we talked about the video game Hitman?
Mm-hmm.
And I told you how I'm like a purist with video games. I listen to audiobooks. I turn off tutorials and hints and objectives. I turn off the mini map. I turn off everything.
Yep.
Subtitles. I have found it's this like recurring theme across many games. Just Cause, Grand Theft Auto, Ace Combat, Sniper Elite, Hitman. I've found there's this basic, it's very simple, and you probably could have guessed it. I found that you don't need to know anything about the story. I don't even play the levels in chronological order. I found it does not matter what it is I can get a passing score if I kill everyone. civilians included. It does not matter. I have found that you're supposed to do this, and you're supposed to wear, you know, no one's supposed to know you're there, and then you poison his drink or something. You know, if worse comes to worse, then you draw your gun.
Just kill everyone.
I have found you get a silenced pistol, you get a silenced pistol, and you just, the first thing you do is you find a guy with a bigger gun, and you kill him, and you take his bigger gun, and then you go find a guy with a bigger gun until you become top dog, and then you just sweep through the map over the course of an hour, just icing everybody. Everyone. Old women, butlers, pilots, truck drivers, caterers, doesn't matter. Security guards, snipers, politicians, you murder. I mean, I'll play this game, dude. My Xbox is overheating because it'll be simulating. I'm not kidding, man. It has a little, I put a temperature gauge on the back of my Xbox. Most games will not go over 120 Fahrenheit.
Of course you did.
Yeah, but I did it with this. That's how I gauge how hard it's working. This one goes up to like 137 because it's just simulating all these bodies. I mean, I'll go through. I'll kill 300 people in one level. It's just everyone. And then I'll finish it and it'll be like, you passed. And I'll start the next level. I won't know anything about it. I'm in a mansion in France. And I'm like, I got an idea of what I need to do. Ice everybody. Blow up every car. Shoot every gas tank. I'll get to the end and it'll be like, you passed. Doesn't matter.
You do realize the people who designed the game probably intended that as a way to do it.
Safeguard just for the morons like me. There's gonna be like, there's someone that's just gonna want to shoot everyone. I just thought you'd be as a guy interested in patterns and things.
That is hilarious. Actually,
murder everyone.
No strategy.
Nope.
The strategy is kill everyone.
I've been playing this game for 2 weeks. I have yet to turn on the volume. I don't even know what his voice sounds like. I don't even know what the sound design is. I have no idea who I am or what I'm. I still don't know anything about the game. I don't know any. I just choose random levels. I don't know anything about this. I started Hitman 2, and then halfway through, I went to Hitman 1. Did a couple levels. I'm just raping the storyline of this thing. Doesn't matter. Murder everyone. Right now, I'm at a spa in like the mountains in Japan. And it has something to do with a virus. That's what I've gathered so far, just from watching. But it doesn't matter because I'm just killing everybody. Butlers, massage artists. Researchers and everybody. No, and it's not even that. It's those in my way. Everyone. I will hunt down the stragglers, and eventually I'll know because it will be like, you finished exfiltrate.
Ding 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 ding. Like,
and I won't know. I'll just be popping, and finally I'll just, you know, hit someone between the eyes, and it will be like, congratulations, Agent 47. I'll be like, there we go. And it's the nuclear whack-a-mole. It's just take it all out.
Wow, almost made me want to get an Xbox or whatever.
Dude, I would if I were you. This game, just even for what I do, where I don't even enjoy the game,
I don't want to go into like the game dynamics, but what you're talking about is like, that sounds like fun.
It's fun as fuck, dude. What I'm saying is the graphics are, I'd say, probably the best of any game I've played. The physics are great. And just go through and you're just icing everybody. Just, I love it, man. It, to me, it is, and what am I doing while I'm listening to it? I'm listening to a history of JFK, Lee Harvey Oswald, which maybe there's some weird similarities between his psychopathy and mine, but. Yeah.
Okay. But, yeah.
But yeah, and tomorrow, not today, today's the 57th anniversary of JFK's assassination, but tomorrow I'm having on two authors, two separate podcasts about JFK, so.
You're a busy dude, man.
I'm a busy dude. And then I'm almost finished with my death spiral of 15 authors in 15 days. Never again. I'll be finished on Tuesday. Never again, Roger. Never again. But let's wrap this one up. I will shoot you an email. Let's do one next week, as always. I fucking love it. And obviously, you get a blank check with the topics. I have yet to not enjoy a podcast with you.
Yeah, I'll think of something to talk about.
Fuck yeah. Well, until then, man, happy Thanksgiving. Roger Williams' book, Metamorphosis of Prime Intellect. If you like sci-fi, get it. If you don't like sci-fi, get it, and you'll like sci-fi. The guy I had on, Roger hasn't agreed to anything, but I'll put words in his mouth. Roger's going to have it narrated. It will be on Audible soon. My words, not Roger's, but I don't care. It needs to go up. And
working on it.
Fuck yeah, man. And all right, my dude. Stay safe. God bless. Happy Thanksgiving, Roger. And hopefully 2020 doesn't dish us an asteroid in the next week and we can hang out again.
Really?
All right, my man.
See ya.
Take it easy, buddy.